I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to My Favourite Takeaway, the podcast for people who love food but can't always be bothered to cook it, which is definitely the case for myself, Tom Crane, and my co-host Simran Shah. How are you, Sim? Are you well?
I'm good, Crane. It was my birthday on the weekend, wasn't it, Crane?
It was. I was wondering how long it would take you to crowbar that in, and you managed 7 seconds.
It didn't take me very long. I was waiting. I was already ready to go. I was like, why hasn't he mentioned it yet? Why hasn't he started
his happy birthday song? It's so rude.
It's so rude.
And then move on to what the show is. Would you like me to sing Happy Birthday? Happy Birthday to you. There you go. That's enough of that.
I'm very glad you came to my birthday, though, Tom. That was fun. It was nice to see you in the flesh.
It was a lot of fun. How was your head the next day? How have you been feeling? We're recording this on a Tuesday morning. This is Saturday night. How was Sunday?
Oh, I was struggling. I still am recovering. Right. But you left early. You left a little early. Did you leave early?
I did leave early. Now, I left early because my kids aren't sleeping at the moment and I knew I'd be up during the night. However, Simran, on the way home, I did do something takeaway based I want to talk to you about. I popped this on our Instagram, actually. Do you think this is sort of cool and edgy and fun and exciting?
Well, or is it no? Okay. By the way that you framed it, I'm going to say no, but go on. Let's hear it anyway.
How dare you? Well, you'll know what it is. I got myself a Five Guys burger on the way home. If you walk past a Five Guys and you're hammered, you can't not have a Five Guys. And then as I was getting my burger from the kind cashier there, I looked through the window and I noticed there was a McDonald's directly opposite. So I went across and I added chicken nuggets. I got chicken nuggets to go as a side with my Five Guys burger. I combined two takeaways in one hammered late night meal. Thoughts?
Oh God! I think that's very impressive. My first question though is, how many chicken nuggets did you get?
I just went 6.
Oh,
which isn't enough, is it? I don't know
that's
why I did
not
that. I should have gone.
That's
if you're
not
choosing
enough.
To go in, I also queued as well. I queued for 6. I don't know what that is. I don't know. I was trying to control myself.
Did you go to a GBK afterwards and just try to pick up some pick up a milkshake or something?
I would have gone with the onion rings. If there was a Burger King opposite, I would definitely have done that. But Simran, on Sunday night, I beat that. I did something which I haven't done in so long. Now, I think this is a bit of a takeaway hack for anyone's listening. If your partner or your flatmate is ordering something different to you from a takeaway, as what happened to me on Sunday night with my girlfriend Claire. She was going for Vietnamese food. I wanted another burger because I was hungover. I got a starter from her Vietnamese takeaway delivered to me. I went for Vietnamese chicken wings, and then I had my burger come from my place. So I went for two deliveries turning up, and I timed it so much that I had my Vietnamese chicken wings, and then just as I was finishing it, like table service, Simran, my burger turned up with the other delivery. Look at that for timing. It was so good.
Do you think that's an exciting
new world?
Is it not only that? I retract my previous statement saying that it was not cool. That is really cool.
It's actually given me an idea, Simran, for a high-end delivery app, which is where you order food from good restaurants and the drivers arrive dressed as waiters. What do you think of that? With a silver tray with your food on it.
I think you'd get confused quite quickly between them as waiters and them as strippers, to be honest.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
It's quite butlers in the buff.
Never combine that with a hen do. Give me a lot of confusion as to what the person at your door is about to do. Someone's ripping down his trousers and he's holding your McDelivery. No! Leave him! Now, I think that's quite impressive. However, it's never as impressive as the stuff that was sent into this show by you, the wonderful listeners. As always, we've had brilliant correspondents. I just want to say, it means the world that you send us all this stuff. It really does. You're sending us some weird and brilliant, wonderful takeaway tidbits, such as Simran. What have we got this week?
Yes, well, okay. So we have a guy called Rob. He's emailed in and he says, hi, lads. My lovely girlfriend has a strange habit of crunching up her poppadoms, sprinkling all over her curry, then mushing it in together with the rice for it to look like what I can only describe as a dog's dinner. It would be great to find out if there are any other people who do this, or is she just a big old weirdo? Keep up the good work. Kind regards, Rob. First of all, I take an issue with calling it a dog's dinner. And the reason I say that is this. I do this, but it wasn't... Actually, that's a lie. I don't do this. When I was growing up, my grandmother used to do exactly this, but not with poppers, with rotis. So she would tear them up, put them inside the curry. It's when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And mush it all together. And then I would eat that. And actually, it might not have looked... Like it did look pretty good. I think you're just being a bit of a snob.
I would say,
if I'm being honest, Rob.
I completely agree with you, Simran. I think most foods are improved by a bit of crunch. I do agree with that. And I use the poppadom in my main course, definitely. I'll use it as a scoop. And I suppose it's doing the same thing. It's providing crunch to the curry. The roti thing, that feels like that's soft on soft, though. That doesn't really seem to work for me.
It is. It was. Well, that's why it was a thing for when I was a kid. Rob is right when he says you're kind of mushing it all together. But yeah. I really liked it.
I think, I mean, I saw this email earlier. And because I had time on my hands, because I've been up since 6 a.m. with my children, I wrote a list around of things that would be improved by putting a poppadom in it. So would you?
Oh yes, here we go. Come on,
my list of things.
I'd love to hear it.
Here's a little jingle.
Nothing more than hearing this. Here we go.
Let's improv a jingle. Things that could be improved by putting a poppadom in it. Crunch. Okay. Number one. A sandwich. Any sandwich would be improved by putting a poppadom in it. Agree?
Yes, I would agree, as long as this poppadom isn't bigger than the sandwich. Because if you're putting a poppadom into a sandwich and it's spilling out, you're going to be eating a lot of poppadom before you get to the sandwich. But carry on.
That's a really good point. And to be honest, you'll probably make the same point on this one. I think a beef burger, most beef burgers will be improved by a poppadom. That crunch as you go through it, a bit of saltiness.
Can I just flag, are you just putting poppadoms inside buns?
No. Well, next one.
In between two pieces of bread.
Well, set your eyes to surprise, because the next one is soup. Because soup is, in my mind, soup is relentless. It never ends. It never changes. There's no let up. Every mouthful is exactly the same. It's so boring. Mm. Anything to break up the dull monotony of soup would be a good thing. So poppadom in soup improves it.
Honestly, your world will be blown, Crane. Have you ever experienced a crouton? There's a crouton in the soup. Can absolutely, I mean, I don't know if you've ever tried it.
I forget you're such a foodie. My fourth one, which I think is quite a sweet one, is just any packed lunch. If you open up your packed lunch box and there's a poppadom in there and you've forgotten you put a poppadom in there, it's a better day. You got your wagon wheel, you got your sandwich, you got your poppadom. It's a better day. And here ends things that will be improved by putting a poppadom in it. Next bit of correspondence, Simran. Let's move on swiftly.
Okay, next correspondence is from Tom. So Tom says, I used to live next door to a very good Indian takeaway. For a while, whenever we used it, I always used to try and order something new. I want to try everything on the menu at least once. So we had a paper menu and I decided to tick it off.
Oh, yes.
We moved before I really made a dent, but I wondered if either of you or any of our listeners has ever completed a menu. I'm going to call you now, Tom. I've never completed a menu. And in fact, even if I were just to move away from what I usually order, I would consider that a completion of the menu. So I'm like quite a creature of habit with that kind of stuff. So instead of an American hot, I had a Pizza Express. I decided to go for, I don't know, a La Reine. For me, that is like, fucking hell, you're really branching out here.
Looking around the room to see if anyone else has noticed that you've gone for a La Reine. Someone else must have clocked that I haven't gone for my normal there. My question there would be, do you think that they are just choosing the dishes they want and then ticking them off? Or are they going through it literally in order? So like, was their first takeaway there just like 5 starters? I mean, how have they approached this?
Well, I presume it's been quite haphazard. I presume they've decided to go for a bunch of stuff. And then they've thought, oh, you know what would be cool is to tick it off. But they haven't done it, have they? This is the
Simran,
thing.
I've had another app idea. I've had another app idea, Simran. This is my big app idea.
Yeah, go on.
This is the waiter one may not pay off, but this one might. It's an app for delivery food, and once you've ordered a dish once, you can no longer order it ever again. It's to try and make you expand your culinary horizon. So once you've chosen it, it's gone forever.
That might be great for the consumer, but I don't think that's very good for the businesses that are operating.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have to find new dishes because their customers can't reorder the same dish. I think that'd be a real struggle from a business model perspective for a menu that will have to be so incredibly wide and expansive that it can accommodate just one each time before it expires. I think that's really tough.
I feel like I'm in front of Claude with my business plan on The Apprentice and you're ripping me to shreds. I'm so sorry, I'm starting to sweat. This isn't going to work, Tom. Please leave. Take your laminated folder. And that was our correspondence. As always, we love the stuff you send us. Send us stuff you have. What weird takeaway things do you do? Anything weirder than me sort of attempting the double up from two takeaway places? What about the Poppadom hack? Do you think, are there other things that you do with your food that you think others might enjoy? If you want to get in contact with the show, here is how.
God's sake. You can follow us on Insta on My Favorite Takeaway Podcast, on Twitter on Fav Takeaway Pod, or email us hello@myfavoritetakeawaypodcast.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, it's time for our next guest, which is Big Hass. Big Hass is a fantastic up-and-coming chef. He trained with Jamie Oliver. The Observer Food Monthly called him one of the next big things. He's 6'6", which is pretty cool. He has a YouTube channel called Sunday Sessions, where he basically cooks barbecues in his garden in North London. And that's where we had our chat with him. We had such a great time. And here it is, Big Hass.
So Simran and I are lucky enough to be at the epicentre in the garden of one of our favourite up-and-coming chefs. We have the beast of a barbecue beside us. Anyone who's watched your brilliant Sunday special videos would have seen the... What would you describe this? This is a
derelict shed.
Derelict shed, to be honest. To the point, chef, derelict shed. Shed, that's the, but it really is an absolute pleasure to be here. And most excitingly, we have your favourite takeaway in front of us as well. So. What are we having tonight? What's this?
We are having Turkish food from Antep Luler in Haringey. And for me, this is the closest you're going to get to like Turkish food in Istanbul. So there's like a category of doner that I like to put things into, and it's like top-end doner, which is like the motherland. Antep falls in.
Okay.
And then anything that's served in like a polystyrene box goes into a lower end doner, which can still be great, but for me, this is like, if you're in North London and you want Turkish food, this is the place to be.
Okay. These doners will be made, I'm guessing lamb neck, is it? Is that what it will be? Yeah, lamb neck. Be made throughout the day.
This will be a mixture of lamb and beef. A lot of people don't
really
know. Yeah, a lot of people, we put beef in our doners to bulk them out. But this would be packed by hand, on site, no off site, no mystery meat, so that it cuts. So like if you watch them cut it cuts like normal doner, and doner in Turkey is actually square and not circle. So the reason it's square so you can get like long strokes with the knife so that you get like folded bits of neck meat and like fatty bits and stuff.
So is circular doner in general sort of worse doner then? Is it or what's the sort of rule? Because the one that you worry about is the completely spherical one where there's never any break in the meat whatsoever. It's like one consistent slab.
That's just down to like emulsifying the meat with fat.
Okay.
So the lower end doner will contain more fat so that the meat sticks together. So you could have like a 70-30 ratio. One, it's cheaper for you to produce. And two, those kebab shops, the punters don't really care. It's like a midnight polystyrene doner that I'm going to smash and then go home and hope I don't puke. Do you know what I mean?
So this place, when we went in, the doners, as they were like turning, was quite clearly they were layered.
The meat was layered.
You could see each individual layer and look good. So Hass, right now you've taken out about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's like 9 dishes. So do you just want to talk us through?
Take us through what we've got.
Yeah. Right. So this is the exciting bit. You know, you get a takeaway, you get to lift up. So you've got a kofteh on rice. So kofteh is like a lamb flat meatball eaten throughout the Middle East. Because this place specializes in doner, they don't have an open fire. So in order for them to cook the kofteh, they have to go flat and then grill them over a grill that's gas-fired.
Okay.
Whereas if you're going to do the kofteh that you're normal to is specific to a region in Turkey called Adana, which is the the name of the kofteh. So that's how they're made there. And it varies because Turkey's so vast, right? Yeah. The more you travel out, like if you go to like Aleppo, the border of Syria, food gets spicier and spices change and like kofteh mixes change. And like, my dad's from Cyprus and our doner's completely different to
I've got to say, Hass, I am glad that you didn't ask us to go to Aleppo for your favourite. I think.
We've got a nice little chickpea salad.
Amazing.
Cute.
So what's in that then? There's
chickpea, it looks like a Turkish version of paprika. I'd say some parsley.
Oh, lovely.
Lemon juice, olive oil.
Perfect.
Bog standard. We've got a nice little salad with a couple pickles and a gherkin on top. Very important.
Yeah. I've hugely got into those pickles recently.
They're the best things.
They're so good. A sandwich can just be lifted with it.
Look at this.
The vinegar as well, you can use just to sort of put through the sandwich a little bit. Oh, it's so good.
So those pickles are served with all sandwiches in Turkey.
Oh, really?
And in Cyprus, right. So if you order a doner in Turkey is a sandwich, right? Like it's considered a lunch food. It's a grab and go kind of meal where I guess here it became associated with like a dirty takeaway. For them, it's just like, oh, let's go get something quick and easy. Doner it is.
So would people be eating like a number of doner kebabs a week in Turkey? Is it one of the things you would go to, like you'd have a Monday to Friday? Here's my fifth one of the week.
I ate 4 in one day on my first day in Istanbul, right? We're Cypriot, right? So for 16 years, from birth to the age of 16, my dad always took us to Cyprus.
Yeah.
We had to stop off in Istanbul and change flights because you can't fly directly to North Cyprus because we're not a registered part of Europe, right?
Okay.
So we'd have to get off in Turkey. And I'd never been to Turkey before. So I said to my friends, I was like, right, let's not do Magaluf, let's not do Ayia Napa, let's do like a pilgrimage, a food trip. Obviously being a chef, I was like, I can't talk about Turkish food and not touch the motherland. Yeah. So I was like, all right, cool, Istanbul. Landed in Istanbul at 10:30 and from midday till about 2 a.m. just eating doners, grilled turbot, stuffed mussels, drinking raki.
What were your friends
doing?
Yeah,
man. Same. Yeah. To be honest with you, I've got heavy eater friends
that trust
me enough now where they're like, if Hass says it's good, let's do it.
My feet are flicking with excitement.
I'm literally
I have a physical reaction on a plane.
So Hass, in front of you is this dish that has a sort of yogurty, tomatoey, meaty, oniony, grilled peppery sort of vibe to it, and so it looks delicious.
This is called Iskender, right?
Yeah.
And it's from Bursa in Turkey.
Bursa, is that a region? Is it?
It's a place in Turkey, a city.
All right, okay. It's quite particular to a city.
It's it carries the same way Italian food does. You know what I mean? So if you go to the south, you've got like Amalfi lemons, that kind of stuff. Turkish food has the same kind of like tradition and background to it. Iskender is the first layer is pita bread. Then you've got really nicely cooked doner meat. Hmm. That goes on top. You've got like a chili tomato water. It's not exactly a sauce. Hmm. It's like a little ladle of joy. Do you know what I mean? And then it's a big whack of yogurt. So now you're looking at greasy meat, fiery tomato, cooling from yogurt. What could we do to make it better, right? Fuck it, we'll just put a ladle of brown butter on top. So it's diet food. Yeah, it's just everything you want, isn't it?
So brown butter is butter that's been fried for, it's been cooked long enough to take it past the point of ghee. Yeah.
So really?
Yeah, where you'd separate ghee and keep the fat from the solids.
Yeah.
You allow the solids to drop to the bottom of the pan and caramelize, which almost gives you like that Werther's original nutty. Yeah. Granddad's pocket kind of smell, do you know what I mean? Like caramel.
I'm so jealous of that four kebabs in a day thing. I've always been, I'm obsessed with Chinese food, and I've always been so jealous of Chinese people because they can openly have three meals of Chinese food a day. If I do that, my girlfriend's like, what are you doing? You can do that, Craig.
What's the Chinese breakfast?
Well,
congee, is that Chinese?
Yeah, it probably is congee. Yeah, it would be. For me, it'd be crispy beef, just three crispy beefs in a row.
None of that Szechuan bullshit.
Yeah, sorry about that. Put the pepper. Exactly. Okay.
All right, so I've just opened a beautiful bag of lahmacun. Again, lahmacuns come in different shapes, different sizes, depending on regions. This would be from like Adana, again, where the skewer is from, so that's what explains the spice. If you move to like Antep, where this food's so-called from, they have pistachios and fresh mint and sliced onions and stuff.
Oh, wow.
Now, for those listening, now, it looks, but it is not...
A Turkish pizza.
A Turkish pizza.
Now, it looks, but it is... It has cheese on it,
exactly.
It's pita.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick photo. This looks so amazing.
It looks so good.
I guess this last baton is just the doner.
Yes.
Oh, God. I don't think this looks so good. I don't think I've been this keen to eat.
I mean, I'd go with that one. First.
This looks great.
I'm going to have a go on this little kofta.
And then, now you said with that doner, there's a doner there, and you said traditional style, no sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you go into a doner kebab place and it's basically drowned in chili and garlic and extra garlic and extra chili. Is that a non-traditional way of doing it, or is that?
I think it's a bang for buck thing. So, like, you know when you go to Subway, right?
Yeah.
Subway, there's so many options, right?
Yeah. Love it.
You go in there with your base and you're like, BMT meatball, whatever it is you're getting, right? Then you look at the salad bar and you're like, I've never put sweet corn and black olive in a sandwich, but you're offering me to put sweet corn and black olives in a sandwich. Fuck it, put double the amount of sweet corn and black olives. So I kind of feel like when it comes to doners, people are just like, oh, am I allowed it all?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but for us as Cypriots, my dad always banged on that the best way to enjoy a doner was grilled meat or slices of meat, parsley, onion, tomato, lemon juice. That was it.
That's it.
Because I guess, again, if you look at like the science of food, I'm not like an advocate for science or whatever, but like I mentioned with the Iskender, is like there's a meatiness and a greasy level that coats your mouth. And then there's like harshness of raw onion. There's acidity from tomato. And then there's like a cooling, clean parsley and lemon juice. So it's like, I once described eating as like, have you ever seen that scene in Ratatouille with the neon lights?
The
rat's eating cheese, and he's like, if I eat these two together, another flick of neon comes out, right? That's how I describe food to people, because I guess it's a reference that we can all understand.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Ratatouille, you're pissed. Just imagine a rat eating one thing, it was one flick of neon, and then he ate two things, and the whole thing erupted. Do you know what I mean?
Well, so, it has parallels with music as well, I think, doesn't it? That's the thing, is that when it's that symphonic, you know, everything chimes together. Definitely. What would you like? What should we start with?
Have
you ever had Iskender?
I haven't had it like that, no.
I think we should try the Iskender, because it looks so good.
We're starting with the, I'm going to pronounce this wrong. I always say lakwan, but that's probably wrong, isn't it? I sound like I'm trying to clear my throat.
You went in like really excited with it, and then was like, oh, I've got this wrong.
So much, kind of, I caught your eye midway through the word. How should I be saying
it? How do you pronounce it?
La-ma-jun.
Oh, I was overcomplicating it.
Lahmacun.
What makes a good lahmacun then?
Crispy bottom.
Yeah.
I quite like them dry, which is probably a weird thing to say, but you can often get them where they're like a little bit greasy. Again, it's just making the vessel to hold your sandwich better by smearing meat on it. It's like a very Turkish way of thinking about things. It's how can I make bread better? Oh, we'll just put meat on it.
And when would people have this? It's just like just
lunch again.
Is it lunch?
Lunch. In Istanbul, they're served really small. Yeah. So, like, you know, a particular sushi restaurant where you pick a small plate, you pick it off. So it's designed so that you can just like be like, oh yeah, two more please, and the guy just fires them in, fires them out. They take like 15 seconds to cook a piece. And you just sit there on like a little stall, looking out into the Bosphorus, just smashing lahmacuns just all day long. Yeah, man, like
love that. That's a sound.
Turkey's
a
bit great, like, man.
There's a lot of this, like, I love that sort of street food culture of small meals. It seems to be like. Well, you've been to India because family there, but like that seems to be the case there as well. It's a lot of sort of small dishes, those sort of.
So, I go to India once every 2 years. Every time I go, recently, my dad has been like, "We have to go to this place called Elko. Elko is the place to go, right?" And he obsesses over the place. We've got to go to Elko. And my family was like, "Why do we have to go to this place? This is not a good place. Why do you keep going to go there?" And it was like, "It does the best pani puri." So pani puris are basically like, they're just like a crispy.
And there's something inside a whole,
basket,
yeah.
Which inside you put...
They're bloody great, though.
Yeah, they are great.
Tamarind sauce with some potato and some chickpeas and that stuff. You knock it all back on one. And he's like, we've got to go to Elko. Turn up, looking at this place. I've never been to this place before. Turns out Elko is as popular in Bombay as Pret is in London.
Yeah.
So it's the equivalent of someone coming over London and being like, we've got to go to Pret. We've got to go to Pret and try their tuna sandwich. We can try a tuna sandwich.
They're line caught tuna.
Driving all the way, driving all the way from Bombay to London just to try a tuna sandwich in Pret. Damn good tuna sandwich, but still.
Yeah.
So,
was it any good? Was
really
it?
Good, yeah.
Pret doesn't often let you down.
That Swedish meatball thing.
Trust me.
It's not bad. So, what should we try next?
I'd say we go Iskender.
Okay.
Yoggety, meaty.
Okay. Yeah, you go first. I want to see how you do it.
Try to get the structure right. So I'm going to go a little bit of this bread and meat mix.
So bread and meat mix first.
On the bottom, and then just get a whack of yoghurt.
Can I ask
and then
like, scoop like my mum to keep serving.
Give me a fork.
Thank you very much. Yeah, cheers. Thank you.
It's the open mouth.
You can tell me I'm a good boy.
Yeah. Here comes the train.
Here we go. Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, it's proper done. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like, it's almost like shawarma. Have you ever had shawarma?
Yeah.
The Persian equivalent.
This Persian is amazing.
Is it? Okay, let's give it a go.
It's so good.
It's that the meat is soft. The pitta is just kind of soaked up all those juices. So that combination of the kind of salty meat with the juices of the pitta and then that yogurt is cutting through, it is absolutely delicious.
But do you know, that's not like doner I've ever had before.
It's a good one. This is like,
it's so traditional. Delicious.
I suppose it's because that meat is, the pitta has become kind of soggy.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a soggy bread inside this.
I like the slight sharpness of the yogurt as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also, as I said before, like it's not a fully cooked out tomato sauce. It gives you that acidity, right? But you'll eat through it, and then you'll get a piece of bread that's like soaked in all the brown butter, and it's like a little flavour change.
Mm-hmm.
So you like it finishes off with like caramel notes, and you're like, it's like eating dessert and meat at the same time, and it's amazing.
So your dad is Turkish Cypriot, is that right?
Yeah.
So did you grow up with Turkish food? What was like your food growing up? Basically, did you get takeaways, and also what was cooked in the house?
So when Dad met Mum, they decided to get married. Dad was like, we need to get married in Cyprus. So Mum spent 18 months in Cyprus after marriage.
Okay.
Learned the culture, learned the language, the ways of life. Came back, and I'd say I was probably born into a Turkish household, although my mum was white.
Yeah.
So we grew up on traditional Turkish food. One, because my dad doesn't like change, right? So like my mum, there's a few things that Dad would be like, oh, shepherd's pie. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Well, like roast dinners. He used to love roast dinners, right?
Yeah.
So we grew up on like traditional Turkish dinners, like bulgur wheat. Rice and stuff and like stews and like one of my favorite dishes is just like braised peas and lamb and tomato. Absolutely delicious. Nice. But Friday nights, Dad would go to the coffee club, right? A little social caf, have chats about politics and probably gamble. Do you know what I mean? And Mum would be like, I've worked the full week at work. I'm not cooking. Why would I cook? Right? So that was our opportunity to have takeaway, and it turned into takeaway Friday. Mm. My auntie and uncle used to come round. I used to bring friends over, and it was like this celebrated thing that we did every Friday where we just get a takeaway.
Yeah.
And like literally every Friday. And if that Friday we didn't have a takeaway, I was disappointed.
Yeah.
Why the fuck are we eating mac? And I'm like, mac and cheese. Or why have you made mac? It's Friday. You know the rules, man. Like, I don't care if it's
I've been
like
looking
half
forward
term.
To this.
Yeah, I don't care if it's half term. You've been off all week.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
And what were you having? What was.
It was mostly Turkish.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was mostly always like a lamb wrap or slowly as I started to like. Take the reins on takeaway Friday, the same way I took the reins on barbecue Sunday, I'd be like, oh, have you not ever eaten Jamaican food?
Yeah,
or like, there's this wicked Vietnamese shop. I'd be like, oh, Mum, you like pho? I've never had pho, but you like it. And then like, I slowly started to convince them that there was a whole world of food apart from this.
And was there any resistance?
Well, yeah, was there the point where your dad was
my dad still resists,
the,
bro.
Oh, really?
My dad Does still he? Resists. Yeah, like, I guess takeaway for me kind of pushed me into cooking different cuisines where I studied MSG. I'm lucky enough to live next to Lung Fung, which is a massive Chinese supermarket.
Oh, yes.
And so where I fell in love with Chinese takeaways and ended up spending £20 a week for like a mixed hors d'oeuvres for two on my own and then wake up in the morning and eat any leftovers as breakfast, I was like, I'm just going to make this shit and try to save some money.
Yeah.
So like, I learned that fried rice isn't fried rice without MSG, or like wok breath, or like actually having a wok in order to create that food. The same way you like crispy chili shredded beef, you can make those dishes at home, right? And a lot of the time better. Like I've probably hit every Chinese takeaway that we have, and I've got one that doesn't let me down. But like on the level of Chinese food,
is that Panda? Is that the one you go to?
No, Panda's in Leytonstone.
Oh,
that's strictly dim sum.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, yeah.
It's free women in the back that hand roll dim sum there and then.
Amazing.
And it's just like a friend of mine told me about it, because we were. I went to tire place that we spoke about on the phone.
Singbury.
A friend of mine. I went to Singbury's and I was getting messages on Insta and people were like, "Oh, you've got to go to Panda. It's four doors down." And I was like, "Okay, next week we'll drive down, go to Panda," and it was amazing, bro. Like I ate dim sum off the bonnet of a car.
Yeah.
But like sunset in Leytonstone. Leytonstone's not pretty, bro. Like Edmonton's not pretty, but for a split second, you're like, I don't care who I'm with or where I am. This food's just fucking great.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has the ability to take you away. And I guess that's why I fell in love with food, man. Is that there's an essence of nostalgia. There's an essence of the unknown. Like, oh my God, I've never seen Chinese chives before or three cornered leeks.
And what's this thing here, which I haven't actually had a sip of yet?
So that's raki. It's a aniseed based.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what kind of alcohol.
Is it like ouzo?
Yes. Oh. But we dilute it. So
it is aniseed.
And it's designed to be eaten with a specific type of meal.
Okay.
So the feta and melon that I've brought out is to accompany the drink. There's a whole culture there's a whole culture in Turkey that's built around that drink.
This drink. So yeah, having melon and feta with this
melon
drink.
And feta, and it'd be mostly like meze stuff. It'd be like yogurt based or like cured fish.
Yeah, yeah.
Small plate tapas, antipasti kind of vibe.
So how am I having this with this drink then? So I've got watermelon and one piece of
eat them both.
Feta. So put both these things together.
Yeah.
The fruit and the cheese. Okay.
Yeah. And then cleanse your palate with a little bit of ouzo-y raka.
Raka. Oh, that is nice.
Oh, that is nice, isn't it?
That is nice, and it's so not a thing you would usually have if you were going for
it's
Turkish food.
It's also a very big creeper in the alcohol industry.
Does it?
Yeah, bro. Like, raki, because you drink it diluted, right? I don't know if this is a wives' tale. When you drink raki, right, your body absorbs the alcohol, and you release the water that you've drank with it, right? So, in the morning, if you've drank half a bottle of raki and you drink a litre bottle of water, it's not a wise tale because it's happened.
Yeah.
And you drink a litre bottle of water. This is day two in Istanbul,
We're back.
Litre bottle of water in the morning, a couple of driest mouth, like little bits of like Donna grease around my mouth still. Banged a litre bottle of water and I was fucking pissed.
Really?
No way.
I was pissed,
absolutely
bro.
Smashed.
I was pissed.
Because the alcohol is remaining.
I was absolutely pissed.
It's quite a good value drink then in that case. It gets you hammered for 2 days in a row.
It's good value drink.
For any students listening.
Now, in your video, you said that the way that you would make the bread... Actually, it was a Jamie Oliver
thing.
Is your favourite style of bread. And you've tried lots of different types. And am I right in thinking that you first got your big break or you first worked with Jamie as a sort of chef? So what happened there?
The career started, 11 years ago. I'm a fully qualified plumber.
Are you?
I was a security guard in the Hayward Gallery on the South Bank, telling people not to touch pictures, which was fucking absolute banter.
Really?
So how did you end up with Jamie Oliver, training with him?
I was sat in my bedroom, downloading music illegally on LimeWire.
We can now timestamp this then.
Mum had seen, I don't know where Mum had seen it, I don't know if it was like on morning telly, but Mum had seen that Jamie ran a course called 15, that he took kids off the street that even have any qualifications or in trouble with the police or didn't have the best start. Mm. Not saying that I come from a broken home or anything, because I don't. I just fucking have a massive thing against, like, authority and, like, regimented lifestyles and stuff like that.
Okay,
there's a little shit in it. And Mum was just like, shoot your shot. Like, what are you going to lose? You secretly watch cooking shows all day long. Like, my brother would watch Gillette Soccer Saturday and I'd wait for him to get up off the sofa and be like, right, UK TV food. And
watch, like, Raymond Blancs.
Just watch 9 hours of Keith Floyd being a racist. Do you know what I mean? So, like, Mum was just like, give it a go, right? Mum said, give it a go. It was a three-part interview. Smashed all three, luckily. Got onto the course.
What was the interview?
First interview was initial meet and greet, right? Because when you open the doors to, let's say, delinquents, you don't know who you're dealing with. Some people come with baggage. Some people come with just like big mistakes that they made in their life and now they're suffering from them. And there's guys like me that are just like, I hit puberty and I wanted to fight. Do you know what I mean? So first one was a meet and greet, getting to know each other. The second part, we were all taken to Hackney College. And we did like this open day. You were partnered with three people, given the Jamie Oliver recipe. Mine was ragu and fresh pasta.
Okay.
And it was to see how you worked in a group. And I was just like, I said to the two guys, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? They were like, I want to make the bolognese. He was like, I want to do this. I was like, okay, cool. I'll attack the pasta. I've never made pasta in my life. Give it a go. did that, got through. The meal was crap. Yeah, but I then
were
after
you making
leaving
fresh pasta?
It, yeah.
Oh, shit. Then, you never done it before?
Nah, bro.
That's hard to do first time.
I had nothing else. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I had nothing else.
They tell you how to do it. They don't just guess.
They give you a recipe from a book.
Okay, yeah.
I was well seasoned as not a chef, but I knew my way around the kitchen, right? So, like, I knew how to cut a potato. I knew what certain vegetables and herbs were. I'd watched hours
of Keith Floyd.
Of cooking shows.
You were drinking and giving takes with the camera at the same time.
Just drinking Amarone. There should be a litre bottle of red wine here. but yes, I'd watched endless amounts of cooking shows, so I kind of understood what was going on. Did that. Went home, was like, oh, I'm never going to get in. Got the third and final call in this garden. I was pacing up and down the garden, chain-smoking cigarettes. Like, they're not going to call me back. They said they'd call me by 5. It's now 6. I didn't make it. Rang me at 6 o'clock. Cass, you start on Monday, right? And you do, like, the first initial week of, like, team building and, like, hi, I'm Hass. And, like, oh, what did you do to get here? It was almost like AA, yeah?
Okay, right, yeah.
But then they were like, we've got a special guest. And we're like, who the fuck's our special guest? In walks Jamie Oliver.
Wow.
Everyone's bum tenses. And you're like, oh my God, the headmistress is here kind of thing, right? Yeah. And then shit got real there and then. The day we met Jamie, the following day, it was into the kitchen, into Chef Wyatt's. So it was 4 days a week in the 15 restaurant.
What time were you starting?
7 a.m.
What time are you finishing?
10 past one.
In the morning?
Yeah, bro.
Whoa. That is full on.
Bro, listen.
That is full on.
People say to me, why do you sit down in your videos? It's because I've worked in an industry where I work 75 and almost 80 hours a week for 10 years. If I want to sit down, I'm going to sit down, bro.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, man. It's a killer.
And so what was, when you first walked into a kitchen, so you've got your proper Jamie kitchen now.
Yeah.
Are you nervous? Are you excited? Are you like, I want to get on with this? Like,
obviously, there was an initial nervousness, no matter what. I knew nothing about kitchens, right? Also, the kitchen at 15 was tiny. I'm 6'6", I'm as wide as a door. There was a stupid, like, pillar right in the middle of the kitchen, right? To hold the rest of the building up. And, like, every day you had to manoeuvre. Obviously, an insider would tell you that industry's absolutely corrupt, right?
Really?
Yeah, like...
In what way?
There's no HR. We can talk about any topic we want. There's like sexual harassment stuff that you can't tell anyone.
And you're working out your hours. You're working 7 a.m. to 1 a.m. Like, that's not.
There's drugs, there's alcohol, there's all types of mad stuff in the industry, right? And don't let anyone glorify it and tell you different, because that's just the way those people are built. Yeah, I know there's people that are doing it to get themselves through the day. And I also know that there's people that have fuck all else.
Than just
spending 80 hours a week in a kitchen. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So you go home. Like, I treated my mum and dad's house like a hotel, bro. It was like, shower, shit, shave, leave.
Yeah.
Shower, shit, shave, back to work. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That was the routine for 11 years, man. And
11 years?
Yeah,
that's a long time you've been doing that.
Yeah, man. And obviously, the higher up you get, you can, like, control, I'm not coming in to put the deliveries away.
Or okay, yeah.
11 o'clock, I've got a meeting, so I'm going to start work at 11.
So what did you start as?
I started as an apprentice, bottom tier.
So what were you doing? Apprentice? Yeah. What did they let you do?
My first ever job in the Jamie Oliver 15 thing was a chicken stock. And I look back at it now, and to cut all the veg for the stock probably took me 2 hours.
Really?
And now it's like, I could probably make a chicken stock, cut all the base, roast all the bones and that stuff in that time.
So is that knife skills you're learning there, basically?
Yeah.
And understanding of how to
flavour stuff. I guess that the very beginning is all about, like, knife skills and understanding the way the kitchen works.
Okay, yeah.
So understanding, like, the hierarchy, understanding the positions, and, like, there isn't that whole French, the highest hat is the highest up in, like, London kitchens.
Yeah.
But you still have
Is that a thing? The higher
the higher the hat. So an apprentice, you're given a skull cap.
Right, okay.
Right? So you're given a skull cap and you're like, okay, I'm just going to look at the floor. Do you know what I mean? If you need me to do anything, chef, I'll do it, chef. Three bags full. Like, if anyone goes down in the battlefield, I'm there. And then the higher up you get, the taller your hats get. So, like, if you look at, like, old school Rue, RIP and whatever, and they're wearing, like, whack, like, Marge Simpson hats, like, all of this is full of knowledge. Like, don't talk to me. Do you know what I mean?
They have a cookbook hidden in there as well. Any point that needs to
turn. Like that.
You have to understand how the
regiment system almost works. It's basically walking into the army.
Yeah.
It's okay, I don't chat shit to that guy, but if that guy wants to go, we can have a little bit of an argument.
Okay, yeah.
So
and it's quite male dominated.
Heavily.
Yeah.
Heavily dominated. But with that, there's cock measuring, there's testosterone, there's I'm bigger and better than you. And it's, I've dealt with it my entire life. Being 6 foot six and a big guy, I'm the guy that always, the little guy wants to fight. Do you know what I mean? I'm the guy that if it kicks off in a nightclub, I'm getting pulled out and I wasn't involved. Just because they know that I could be a nuisance. Do you know what I mean? So they're like, I walk into kitchens and they'd be like, oh shit, he's a big guy. I'm going to have to like show him that I'm not to be messed about with. A level of like bravado to be like, this is what kind of guy I am.
Yeah.
But I've dealt with it forever, bro. Like I was...
So have you seen fights in the kitchen? Has that been a thing that actually happens?
Yeah,
really?
Of course, bro. Of course,
But sorry, you say you've dealt with it for a while. So like what, at school? Like, was
bro,
that
since year seven, man. Like since year seven, I've been a big boy, bro. Do you know what I mean? So it was always like older kids in older years were like, right, you're a big kid. You think you're bad? And it's like, no, I'm just...
Larger
than you are. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I had to like deal with it. And again, like being from like North London and a Turkish background, as I'm doing now, I talk with my hands. And like, a lot of the time in my life, I've been deemed aggressive. And it's like, you have to come away from that shit and realize you're the smallest fish in the sea now.
Mm-hmm.
You've just got to shut up and soak everything you can. And I did that for
And was that easy
eight
for
years.
You? Was that easy for you in the kitchen?
Yeah and no. Like, there's sometimes where I was just like, this is my job. And, like, I knew what my end goal was. When I got into 15, I knew what my end goal was. I was like, I've got fuck all else. I'm never going to be a plumber because I can't fit in an airing cupboard. And would I ever go back to security, I'd rather chop off both of my hands. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was like, this has to work, Hass. This is our last opportunity.
Was there a point where you felt the change was happening and you were really getting to grips with it? At what point did you think, would you have thought, OK, I'm becoming a chef?
The day I graduated, 15.
So that was after?
13 months.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So you had confidence by that point?
Yeah. So the entire way through, you're still an apprentice, right?
Yeah.
But the last week of the course, all the chefs that work there, so you shadow the main chefs. You're never like in charge of the kitchen, we're going to produce brilliant food. You shadow the main chefs. The last 2 weeks of the course, they go on holiday, and now the apprentices take over the kitchen. You're there with your head chef and your sous chef, and it's down to you lot to run this restaurant with the head chef.
Shit.
And like, throughout the entire system, they're like, you need to be ready for Chef Week. You need to be ready for Chef Week. You need to be ready for Chef Week.
God.
Tom Kerridge comes to the day that I'm having the worst day of my life. Like, I'm having the
what
worst
was going
day.
Wrong?
I was on grill section. I'm a grill boy. I was on grill section, grilling off steaks, and the chef on garnish was late on every one of my tickets. And like, I'm grilling the protein. Someone else is making the chips. You're dressing a parsley shallot and caper salad. And it's like, how many times do I have to tell you I'm 2 minutes away on meat, your garnish should be done?
Yeah.
And like, this is what understanding the kitchen...
And timing's so key as well with a steak.
This is
well.
With meat and steak. Yeah. Can't
this is what understanding the kitchen is. That like, we're 13 months in now, man. You need to know that when I give you that call, you need to be ready on what you're doing. So like, Tom Kerridge is watching me get more and more irate, right? And I'm about to blow my shit. I'm like, I'm throwing away steaks because they're over-resting, or like, I'm back on four tables because you're not ready. It's shit never rolls uphill, bro. Do you know what I mean? If you're not ready, the entire system shuts down.
Yeah.
It's not a kink in the chain that we're just gonna unknot and pull apart and be like, okay, cool, all systems will go again.
Yeah.
It just goes bang down like that. Everything shuts down. I got really angry, right? I got really angry. Kerridge pulled me aside, right? He stuck my sous chef on my section and he pulled me aside and he was like, big man, he was like, we're big boys, yeah? He's like, you can't lose your shit like that. And I was like, I haven't lost my shit. I've raised my voice, bro.
You think that's me losing my shit?
I was like, I've raised my voice. Everyone else does it. But when it's me, it's like, oh no, Godzilla, do you know what I mean? So he pulled me aside and he was like, listen, if you ever want a job, come work for me, right? I applied and he was like, yeah, there's a 4 month waiting list. I was like, okay, thanks. Didn't go. Shout out Kerridge, though. Kerridge is a great guy. Really slim now.
I thought that story was going to end with you punching someone, but then having a steak to help the brood get out.
I've had heated moments.
Yeah. In the kitchen.
I've had a chef punch me.
Really?
Yeah, I've had a chef punch me. I've had a chef push me onto a grill.
Oh.
All types of shit, bro.
And are these things ever reported and anything happens, or is it just what happens?
A lot of the time, it just turns into fisticuffs.
Oh, really?
And it's like...
And inside the kitchen, or are you taking it outside the kitchen?
I try to take it outside the kitchen.
Someone's still doing their parsley shallot, and then there's a fucking fight going on.
No, this not... The heated shit normally happens during service. So there's an excuse. Do you know what I mean? It was like, oh, it was the heat of service. Okay, if I'd said anything during the heat of service, the heat of service. Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, you're just a cock. Stop blaming it on something else, right? But I, when I got to senior positions, whether that was like senior CDP, which is chef of party. Oh, yeah. So like when you get to a more senior position, you kind of like see that shit, understand that shit, and just let it roll water off duck's back. Do you know what I mean? You're like, okay, cool. I've been there. A lot of it's I've earned my stars and stripes.
Yeah.
So like you get to like arrogant head chef position where it's like, oh, I don't have to pick peas anymore. So I said to myself, when I got into a more senior position, that I was gonna try and teach the staff and like bring the staff under my wing and be more friendly. And it completely backfired.
Oh.
Completely backfired.
Why was that?
Why?
So I got to sous chef at a particular restaurant and was really friendly with the team. I was the guy that they ran to, was like, Hass, I fucked up.
Mm.
Like, I know you've got my back, right? I was like, yeah, I've got your back. Sort stuff out. I was the guy in that restaurant. Do you know what I mean? Head chef then leaves. Hass gets promoted.
Yeah.
You then have to go from being everyone's fun uncle to like the black and white Cruella de Vil babysitter that's like, stop fucking about.
Yeah.
Why isn't this right? Why isn't that right? And all of a sudden it's like, oh man, I thought we were friends. And it's but like, no, but I've now got investors breathing down my neck. Yeah. I've not got a head chef breathing down my neck. It's now investors. It's now GPs, profit margins. It's about turning over money. It's about all this other stuff that I didn't want. Restaurants don't just work. It's like, oh, I've got something delicious, boff, and I'm gonna charge you 26 quid. It's how much was this price per kilo? How much was that?
Really?
What's in the height of season? What's cheapest? So if you eat, the reason that restaurants eat seasonally is because when it's at the height and it's in an abundance, the price drops.
So talk us through the construction of a menu then. How does that work? Who is deciding that? Is the head chef and the money
it depends because although it's the same industry throughout, it depends where you work. So like if you work in, I don't know, a 5-star hotel, you could be one of a team of 50. And there could be 3 consultants, 4 head chefs, 6 sous chefs, right?
Mm.
And that would normally be the consultancy team and the executives.
Mm.
And they'd just pass it down,
right,
down the ranks. This is what we're doing now. In smaller restaurants like I worked in, it was sous and head chef and the owner. So I worked for Stevie Powell for a very long time. Rotorino, Doc Kitchen, Palatino. Basically made those restaurants maybe the chef that I am. Like I worked with some brilliant chefs, right? But he was very like, you get to a position and he's like, I trust you, do what you want. And that's what I needed, do you know what I mean? I needed someone to be like, you've got this in the bag, just cook what you want to cook.
Was there like a dish that you were like,
shit,
this is what's made me?
My first ever special.
Which was?
Sotolio, which is like, it's a dish that celebrates like spring, spring, early summer. So it's peas, broad beans and asparagus that's like slowly confit in olive oil with like with lemon rinds, rosemary, basil, whole cloves of garlic. I've got some, I cooked some today actually. I've cooked it for something else, but we'll have a little spoonful, right? And then it was a really nice, they were called Sasso chickens, which is a particular breed of chicken from a great farmer. Stuffed it with ricotta, fresh thyme, lime rind, black pepper and salt, parmesan, grilled it. And then it was just like really beautiful chicken sat on top of really beautiful vegetables with a piece of toast with a smear of ricotta on it. And I remember there's a picture, the general manager took a picture of it. And like, you can see the genuine happiness. I don't often smile in pictures, right? But there was like a genuine happiness that was like, this is what we do this shit for, bro. Do you know what I mean? I worked all these hours to get to a point where someone can be like, yeah, that was cracking.
Let's crack into the next.
Yeah, well, you were mentioning earlier about your steaks getting cold.
We should probably try the kofta. Yeah, go kofta. And the lamb.
So kofta over rice.
Great. So we're now having, this is the lamb kofta.
Yeah.
Which is lovely. And the chickpea salad, which is really nice. That's got a sort of freshness to it.
Yeah.
This kofta's on the grill.
Yeah.
You call yourself a grill guy.
Yeah.
And you do this thing called barbecue sundaes.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you one question.
Tell me.
Why are the British so bad at barbecues? Because I find British people, generally, the barbecue game is turn on a barbecue, shove some sausages on, and that's it.
Us Brits, I'm half British, you see. I'm half English. Especially us Londoners, it's all very fast, fast, fast. Whether that's going to work in the morning, I want to be the first on the train, it's hustle and bustle. It's like Deliveroo, I want it instant at my door. Yeah. There's no like, it's all about me, and I need to get to where I need to get to, right? And I kind of feel like barbecue in the British community is the same. And it's like, burgers, yeah, everyone likes burgers. Or sausages, everyone loves sausages. We're just going to stick them on and hope for the best.
Yeah. So and you've then, got a proper, I mean, I'd almost, it's kind of like an old, like an American pit.
It's an oil drum. So
that's an offset smoker. So the little drum on the left-hand side is to light logs in order to smoke big bits of meat. Underneath that blanket thing over there, I've got a drumbecue, which is like a Jamaican-style 70-litre oil drum.
There's okay,
a
yeah.
brilliant bit of kit. There's a little gas pizza oven down there. You could barbecue over anything. Like Turks, we've broken down shopping trolleys and use that as a grill. You put two bricks underneath it, light a fire, you've now got a barbecue. Like, it doesn't have to be posh and privileged and like beautiful. When I went to Sri Lanka, it was coconut shells, a grill rack from his oven.
That's so cool.
Yeah,
like, and you can still achieve the same things.
100%,
with all the,
yeah, 100%.
Well, I remember watching the Rick Stein India thing, like when he's just in a shack. He's in a and there's a thing you forget, like even Keith Floyd. You're like, these guys can cook on anything, anywhere, as long as there's a bit of heat and some sort of utensil, then they'll make it work.
But I mean, it's like buying the best pair of football boots and thinking you're going to become the best player in the world. When Beck's brought out Predators, and they were like 270, and I was like, Mum, I need a pair of Predators, man. I ended up with a pair of yellow, like, Lotto from Italy. Like, what the fuck are these? I'm never going to be the best in the world. Do you know what I mean?
Just but part like, of you think it was because of the boots.
100%. 100%, bro. Okay. But yeah, I kind of feel like there's a level of snobbery in food now, right? And the reason I do what I do and the way I do it is to show you that you can be from the ghetto, you can not have loads of money in your pocket, but you can still sit in your garden and eat lobster. It's about finding it, sourcing it, knowing where it is. I'm cooking on a barbecue that I've had for 11 years in front of a shed that hasn't had a roof since I was about 14. So, like, it doesn't have to be this, like, dinner jacket Le Gavroche vibe in order to enjoy good food. It's just about education. And again, that comes down to, like, British barbecues and like what the Brits think food is anyway, because I kind of feel like as Brits we're very like narrow-minded in the way we think and the way we look at things. It's like, oh no, we're British and we eat this and we eat that, where it's like all over the world there's other things that are celebrated, like eating offal is massive in some countries, and for us it's like, no, that's peasant food. One of the biggest soups in Turkey is sheep's head, and like if I served you a sheep's head soup with our privilege, you'd be like, what the fuck are we eating? There's so much more lamb. There's all of that.
Come on, there's the whole
thing. You've given me the bit with teeth in. Do you know what I mean? So, like, it's, I think it's the way that we look at food. Like, I feel like as, like, living in the first world and being privileged, we don't have that like, urge to be like, I've got no money, I can't afford to eat. Yeah, the necessities, exactly.
So given your experiences and how you've used them to work really hard at Jamie's and establish a name for yourself, what's your ambition now? To, like, are you keen to kind of impart the knowledge? Can you make it, like...
I don't ever want to put a chef jacket on.
Right.
Don't ever want to put a chef jacket on. I thought about it a million times just to, like, open a really good kebab shop and be like, OK, this is the money I know, I'm going to get a mortgage and I'm going to just sit and chill. The dream, even when I was at 15, was to travel the world and showcase and, like, have a camera crew, have a film guy, and just have the opportunity to chat shit. Although I grew up watching chef shows secretly, and I didn't watch it for the entertainment value, I watched it strictly for food, because I found the entertainment value was so far-fetched for someone like me.
Right,
it was like, stick on a lumberjack shirt and cook in front of an aga.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know what an aga is. No one in my house has got to spare 13 grand. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was watching it purely to learn about food. And like, the only people that I'd say were relatable at the time that I was watching, one was Jamie. But like, when the whole Naked Chef thing came out, like, Jamie's my bro. Like, I always feel like I owe that man something, right? And I'd be lying if I said I didn't go on the course and be like, I want to be the new Jamie, bro. But like, I want to do it in a way that's more accessible for people like me. So like, I know we spoke about like me getting a special on the menu and it being great. One of the biggest things I've written about recently is making scallops for my friends for the first time, right? So I've got this friend Robert, shout out Rob, and he was my guinea pig for like 8 years. I couldn't bun spliffs at home, so I'd go to Rob's and bun spliffs, right? I'd bun spliffs for a little bit of inspiration, and I'd be like, Rob, we'd be sat in the garden looking at the sun, I'd be like, Rob, you ever eaten scallops, bro? And he'd be like, nah, tell me about scallops,
Tell me about scallops.
And I'd rope him in and I'd be like, bro, they're like in this shell. Like, They're hermaphrodites. They're sweet. They're delicious. They see through their skirt. Do you know what I mean? And like they make wicked ashtrays afterwards. Yeah. And he'd be like, all right, cool. Let's get in the car. We jump in the little 1.4 Polo, go into the fishmongers, and I built relationships everywhere I go. I try to build a relationship, whether that's the butchers, the fishmongers, and I go in there and I'm like, yo, Andy, like, I need some scallops or whatever. Bring them back, and then. I remember Robert looked at them like they're the size of this, like I'm holding a little garlic sauce takeaway pot. They're about the size of that. A big scallop's about that size, right? And I remember Robert was looking at me and he was like, bro, this, I'm gonna eat three of those each. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, okay, cool. So I bought a gilt head bream and I got the fishmonger to fillet it for me, right? So now I've got a side of fish each and three scallops, yeah? And then I'm walking down Enfield Town, getting a little bit inspiration, yeah? Yeah. And stumble across the greengrocer market, right? Late spring, early summer, peas and broad beans in abundance. I was like, all right, cool. We're gonna buy peas and we're gonna buy broad beans. I'm gonna make a little like beurre blanc and I'm gonna slowly like cook these through the beurre blanc, right?
How old are you at this time?
Yeah.
Because this is not your usual, I got the munchies, I'm gonna go get some Watsits.
22, 23. And so I was like, all right, cool. So we drive back to Rob's and I say to him, you're podding peas and beans. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do the rest of it. And I lit the barbecue in his garden. I put a saucepan, I put a frying pan on his fire. And he was like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm gonna cook over the fire. And he was like, but with a frying pan? I was like, yeah, just shut up. Just do the peas, innit? Like, you're good. Like, you're good. I've got this in the bag, bro, don't worry. So grilled the fillets of fish, pan fried the scallops, made my little beurre blanc and folded my like fresh veg through it, finished it with like mint and parsley, spooned it onto a plate. And I remember just him looking at me and being like, bruv, this is like restaurant stuff. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm like, bro, this is the munchies. Do you know what I mean? This is what I want. This is what I want to eat.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is munchies, bro. Like, yeah, I like to smash packets of Monster Munch now and again and a couple of Skittles and whatever. But like, those times when I was bunning spliffs, right? I don't bun spliffs anymore. But those times when I was bunning spliffs was like the time where I'd sit and all of the food shows that I've seen or any bit of like information or knowledge that I had banked, what I like to call the pantry is my head. anything that I had banked would just come to the forefront and be like, oh, do you remember that time we watched, what was that guy's name? Luke and Guy and make salt and pepper prawns. Yeah, we're doing that today.
That's amazing.
Do you know what I mean?
That's so cool. Information,
yeah, yeah,
dude.
And I just
fantastic.
Pull it up. My head is always just like rap lyrics and recipes, bro.
Give you a contrast sort of cook I am. The first meal I ever cooked for someone was in my year 9 home ec exam, and I did beans on toast. But worse than that, I didn't even toast the bread. I put the beans on the bread and then I microwaved the whole thing. And the only reason I passed is because my teacher, Mrs. Johnson, hadn't had a breakfast, so she just ate it and just passed me. So, yeah, thank you very much, Mrs. Johnson. But I love that. That's the way you work. It's you're picking these things together and you're creating sort
of... Yeah, man.
That's so not cool. Art with it. It's amazing.
I guess... I struggle with like anxiety and depression, like I guess that half of the world do, right?
Yeah.
Not spoken about often, but I struggle with anxiety and depression, right? And I feel like to be inspired, I have to be in a happy place.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time I am, and sometimes I'm not. And when I'm in like a Debbie Downer, I'm just eating crisps and like I'm eating chocolate and I'm eating shit food. When I'm like, I have little triggers, bro, and whether that be like the sun's out and I'm thinking grilled fish, I'm thinking lobsters, I'm thinking summer food like watermelon and cheese. Yeah. Or like if it's a gloomy brown day, mum wants a mushroom risotto. I'm like a seasonal eater in that sense.
Yeah.
But I just feel that food fucking fuels everything I do, everything I think about, everything that, anything that's gonna make me happy or like bring me down. It's like having a shit takeaway will bring me down, bro. And I'm like, why have I spent £30 on this?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like I could have made this better. So I guess if that wasn't the way my mind worked, I'd be in the wrong industry.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
it sounds like you're hardwired to be a chef and cook.
Of course, like a DJ's got to be thinking about mixes all day, bro.
So we've got, I think we've got our final things here, which we've not tried the lamb doner.
So as we're trying the lamb doner, I mean, you say that sort of bad takeaway will bring you down. Do you get many takeaways nowadays or not really? Are you kind
of... Yeah, I do. I'd still say that I'd get one a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what would that be? What's your sort of...
My go-to at the minute, right, the second option that was after this was... A place has just opened in Bruce Grove that does jerk chicken doner.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
You did mention that.
Yeah,
that
so I went in it sceptically.
Yeah, right? What's it called?
My 10, I think it's called. Okay. Or A10 or some shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And a friend of mine had told a friend of mine and was like, you need to take Hass to this place, they're doing jerk chicken donna. And like we used to have like jokes with like my Jamaican friends that we'd open a place called Jerk and Turk and we'd do like a mixture of Jamaican, great. Yeah, Jamaican food and Turkish
yeah,
food.
Fantastic.
So I was like, shit, I've got to try this. So it was basically donna meat that was jerked chicken on a skewer, cut the same way you'd cut donna, but over rice and peas and coleslaw.
Oh, wow.
And lovely. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's obviously, it makes sense. It's going to be
a good idea.
It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be delicious.
It's going to be great.
But it was one of those that I came across. I was like, yeah, I'd have that again. And for me, that's all it takes is that little box tick. But when food's that good, I'm willing to travel, bro.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't anywhere out of the way for me. Like, me and the boys to go for Chinese food often go to Four Seasons in Bayswater.
Mm-hmm. That's such a great place.
And you know what I love about Four Seasons?
That's such a great place.
So fucking rude.
Yeah, they're so rude.
Like,
yeah.
I'd flick through the menu, right? And there's some just dishes that are written in Chinese. They're written in Mandarin or whatever, Cantonese or whatever it is. And I'd be like, what about this one? He'd be like, no, you won't like that. I mean, like, what do you mean I don't like that? Do you know what I mean? Like, the picture looks great, bro. Like, what is this? You two, stop being so secretive. And then slowly you build...
But I quite like. I've always quite liked rude waiters. Mm. Places where I know it's going to be a bit rude. Like there are a couple of Indian restaurants that I go to, and the waiters will be pretty rude, right? But it's just part of the vibe. And I remember going with my girlfriend, and the waiter, I would say things like, "Give me some water, will you?" or something, right? To her, she was like, why are you being so rude? I'm like, no, you don't get. Like there was something about, like if I just said, "Get me this." It sounds rude to an English person, but genuinely, the exchange between me and the Indian waiter, it was just like a...
I'm the guy who is ignored for about half an hour while he's waving his hands around. trying to
excuse me. You've got a polite face, though.
Very polite. When I'm looking to pay the bill, it will take... I'll have to basically start... feeding that in about 40 minutes before I want
to
leave.
Tend to walk out.
Exactly.
I'm going now. You have to go to a Turkish restaurant with a Turkish guy.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the way it is. And I feel that it's a lot, it's the same throughout a few cultures. It's like if you took me to an Indian restaurant and you were like, oh, there's this secret off the menu thing, I'm never going to fucking know about that, bro.
Yeah.
Or like if I say to you, you get a lamb wrap, but you have to get parsley, onion, tomato, and chili.
Yeah.
You're not going to know that unless I've brought you the insider.
If I took you to a little chef, for example.
You took me to KFC.
If you took me to a prep, you'd say.
That's really interesting.
But
you've
got to have the Swedish people around.
I guess for you to be like almost initiated and accepted by that culture, you have to show that you're involved in that culture, whether that be through a friend or through your other half. And Turks are very much like that. Now, I know you guys got freebies, but if we went to this restaurant together, and I walked in and I was polite and I said hello and they saw me and they recognised me, it'd be like, oh, don't get a takeaway, sit down. We'll make it hot, fresh, we'll do this for you. We'll give you tea at the end of your meal. There's like a level of like Turkish hospitality, right?
Interesting.
But Turks are also the worst at thinking that they're the best at everything and that the world revolves around Turkey. And
well, it did used to about 400 years ago.
Yeah, but it's got to stop at some point, do you know what I mean? You can't just be arrogant the entire time. It's a cultural thing.
So let's try the last dish then. So this is doner kebab in. You tell us what we're having here.
So this is doner wrap.
Yeah.
With just tomatoes, parsley, and onion. I'd say squash a little lemon into the top.
So you just have it. Okay, interesting. So it's just a salad then.
Mm.
And why is that? Just taste the meat more? Is it fresher or?
I just feel like things like red cabbage, white cabbage, and cucumber just add a moisture, and you end up with like that wateriness in the bottom of your wrap. Yeah, that makes it fall apart quicker.
Mm.
And you kind of just want, when the doner's this good, you want to be able to taste the meat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I feel like those flavours complement the meat more than a watery salad.
It's really, really nice. Mm. There's a overlap with the lahmacun. The acidity of the lemon just peppering, just going, punching through the meat. It's really, really nice. So this is a great takeaway. Have you ever had takeaway disasters in your past or are there sort of things that annoy you or frustrate you about takeaways?
Just that certain delivery apps always seem to get orders wrong. It's always normally McDonald's as well. McDonald's are really bad at like getting anything right.
Yeah, yeah. Never try and get the right dips from McDonald's as well. You're never going to get anything right.
They should just call it Lucky Dip. You pay 20p. and they give you whatever the fuck they give you. Do you know what I mean? Enjoy. I really, really dislike bad Chinese.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, you know when you get Chinese and it slips out of the container in its same shape.
And it's a block. Yeah, it's a block
of chow mein.
You could build a house with it if you got enough of it. What is that? It feels like there's a sort of laziness around it. Maybe it's assuming that sort of people here don't know enough about Chinese food. People are quite lazy with the way they'll... I think the
way I judge places is the demographic and the clientele. So if you take me to an Indian restaurant, I'm expecting to see Indian families. If I take you to a Turkish restaurant, I expect to see Turks. Chinese takeaways doesn't really happen.
White guys smoking cigarettes.
Of course. Like if we went to Four Seasons together, there's groups of Chinese families. Yeah. For me, I know I'm in a decent place. But like the little corner shop wood green Chinese top wok, nah, bro. That's just like whoever the fuck wants like mystery
it's
container
so true,
food.
That lump when it comes out.
Yeah, man.
I can't stand it. I also wish that they used the New York style cardboard boxes here. I love when you watch like Friends or something and they get those ones. Why do they always just Tupperware?
Grew up watching Friends. If you go to your local Chinese wholesaler, you can buy them. And put,
oh, really?
Yeah, you can put the food in them. Yeah.
That feels a bit bleak. No, doesn't it?
All for social media.
All for social media, yeah, exactly.
My local Chinese does this. What are your favourite chips from a takeaway?
I don't get takeaway chips that often.
I think I do like McDonald's fries when they're fresh. Mm-hmm. If you get them in the... I do quite enjoy...
But usually, if you're getting a takeaway chip, it's usually part of fish and chips, usually. If I'm... Like, I would never get a kebab and chips. I'd never get... I mean, I'm not really getting chips in any other type of food, except maybe a fish and chips. And even
Burger,
then...
KFC? McDonald's?
Yeah, you've named three places that I often get chips from.
I was like, do I just argue this back? Yeah. I just be like, no, I don't get chips
so
from there.
So confident there.
So obviously not the case, I don't just concede quickly.
You're going to think about your meals for the week.
You very quickly named three places that I regularly get chips from.
Yeah.
McDonald's chips are the best.
So KFC, Burger King, McDonald's, let's give them a ranking. I think the best chip McDonald's, you have fresh.
McDonald's, KFC, Burger King.
Worst KFC, middle Burger King.
What? Worst KFC?
Yeah, I think so.
No. McDonald's, KFC, best Burger King.
KFC has just gone like skin on.
Have they?
Yeah, fair play.
You can dip it in the gravy. You can dip it in the gravy.
But the one that tops them all is Five Guys.
Oh, yeah.
Five Guys Cajun.
Yes, that is
but
good.
But also a
Nando's Peri Peri chips.
I've only ever been to Nando's once.
What?
Yeah, bro.
No way.
But I can make nice chicken, innit?
What about salt and pepper chips from a Chinese takeaway?
That's what I'm about to say.
Yeah, salt and pepper
tops
chips.
It.
Yeah, fuck
although
it. I eat a lot of chips
soggy.
From takeaway, actually.
Yeah, although they're a little bit soggy.
Yeah.
And they're the shittest caliber of chip. What they do to them with like the MSG, the Five Spice, chilies, peppers, onions, legit.
Yeah.
Anything salt and pepper, I'm game.
Yeah. That's what the MSG, that's the thing.
Salt and pepper squid.
Yeah. Yeah. All day, every day.
I suppose we can name salt and pepper anything, but it's just seasoning, isn't
it? Yeah.
So we've learned a lot today. We've learned loads about your career in food. We've learned incredible amounts about Turkish food. We've learned that Simran is 89% shit, but he doesn't know it.
We've had so much great food. Tom, what's been your favourite?
My favourite, I have to say, was probably the Iskender. It was just so rich and just had... I love that yoghurt on top, just cut through. It was really nice. I thought it was all beautiful, to be perfectly honest. And also having the doner like this, where it's sort of stripped back, really, really works. I think you're right about that. You can overload it with like red cabbage and stuff like that. And it becomes too heavy. So I really like that. What about you, Simran?
I mean, I completely agree with the Iskender. I think it was this secret ingredient that I didn't know existed until Haz told me about it, which is the brown butter.
Yeah.
That is absolute killer. Mm. And then, of course, the lahmacun.
Lahmacun.
Yeah. Lahmacun.
Turkish pizza.
Lahmacun, Turkish pizza. That was great. I mean, it was honestly, that was the best Turkish food I've had in such a long time.
And just to remind people where it was again, it's...
Antepliled on Green Lanes in Haringey.
Well, because this has been genuinely a pleasure. You are a joy to speak to, and I would say genuinely inspiring. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Just as your love of food and the fact you've just followed a career and done something you care so much about is really just wonderful. So thank you very much for giving so much of your time.
Me,
it's been
thanks,
genuine
man.
Joy. And thank you for this lethal anesthesia.
Yeah,
when I wake up in the morning, I have to look after my 5-year-old, my 3-year-old at 5 in the morning and regret,
okay.
But it's awesome.
Cheers,
boys. Thank you.
So that was the fantastic Big Haz there. What a fascinating bloke. Just brilliant. Such an amazing person to talk to. Lovely to chat to someone who has that sort of proper just love of food. Yeah. Adore chatting to him. What an absolute good legend. Thank you once again for joining us on My Favourite Takeaway. Before we go, just want to say your support means so much. The messages you send us mean a great deal. And if you're enjoying the show, we would love it if you take the time to leave us a review and to subscribe to the show and to sort of spread the word and tell your friends that you're enjoying it, because we'd love people to listen. We want to get as many people on board as possible, because we've got so many great people coming up in the future. So leave us a review, subscribe, like, and share.
I was just going to say, great.
Yeah.
Sorry. There's this moment when you said leave a review. I felt like I was going to say, if you could leave a 5-star review, that'd be great. But then I felt like I sounded like an Uber driver asking his passenger to leave a 5-star review. Would you never get the 5-star review?
But do spread the word, and also do keep sending us your amazing emails about your sort of weird takeaway things to hello@myfavoritetakeawaypodcast.com. Next week, who do we have, Sim?
Next week we have the incredible and very popular comedian Phil Wang, fresh off the back of a Netflix special, and we're in his flat and we're eating some amazing Malaysian food, and Phil has like the most incredible knowledge of Malaysian food, and it was such a privilege, I would say, to eat with him, and we really hope you enjoy it. It was great fun.
We'll see you next week.